89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm Dylanique.
And I'm Sylvia.
Welcome to the High Vibes in the Mind podcast,
where multicultural moms connect.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today, I have a guest. Her name is Joanna. As a tenured pediatric sleep expert, Joanna Clark of Blissful Baby Sleep Coaching helps sleep-deprived families get where they want to be. Well-rested. There is no need to cry it out. Easy bedtimes, peaceful nights, reliable naps, and confident parenting and a harmonious household are all possible. Joanna provides guilt-free and gentle sleep coaching solutions using proven evidence-based methods with her step-by-step and child-led approach. She helps parents tenderly teach the skills of sleep to their child. Over the past decade, Joanna has helped over 1,000 families solve their child's sleep struggles. Joanna is recognized as one of the top 200 coaches in the U.S., an international best-selling author. Let's hear it from her.
Hi, everyone. This is Veronique back on High Vibes and a Mic. And today I have a guest. Her name is Joanna. How are you today, Joanna?
Hi. Nice to see you. I'm so happy to be here today. Talk all things sleep.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Thank you for coming. I'm very, very excited to talk to you. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be too, because I'm sure there's some of them, a lot of them have the same issue that I have right now with my toddler. That's why I really wanted to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start with the first question. So you're a specialist of this. So what are some common misconceptions about baby sleep that parents often have from your experience?
Great question. Okay, so I want to just preface this conversation right from the get-go, and I'll probably mention this a couple times. I am a trained and certified gentle sleep coach, which means that I do not believe in cry it out. So the first misperception or information about sleep coaching or sleep training is that if you sleep coach or sleep train your child, it means you are leaving them unattended in the room and they are crying themselves to sleep. Yeah. So when people think of sleep coaching and sleep training, they literally have this immediate visceral response that they are going to be leaving their child in the crib and walking out the door and not being attentive and loving and careful with their child. And I want to let you know that that is not at all what I recommend, nor does that cry it out mode work. It doesn't have a lasting effect. And the reason why is this. Although sleep is a biological need that all human beings have, it is also simultaneously a learned skill. And there are three skills that have to be learned in order to have beautiful, blissful sleep. And the three skills are self-regulation, followed by self-settling, followed by self-soothing. So a child has to learn three separate skills and then learn how to use those skills in sequence so that they can go into their crib or their big boy bed or big girl bed, what we call in the world of sleep science, drowsy but awake, meaning they go in pretty awake, and you are able to watch them actively regulate, settle, and soothe themselves to sleep at the onset of sleep at bedtime, after beautiful daytime sleep, and at the right sleep window. And in order for that to happen, right, is it's a skill set. So you have to create the optimal circumstances and environment for the skill set to come online. And that is what sleep training is. So true sleep training is not something scary. It's not something bad. It's not something dangerous. It's not something mean. If it is done correctly, using sleep science, behavioral science, and attachment theory, if you're using those three sciences as the foundation, all you're really doing is creating optimal circumstances and environment to help your child learn the three skills of regulate, settle, soothe at the onset of sleep so they can do it for every arousal all night long. That is what sleep training or sleep coaching is. So when people say sleep coaching is bad, it's cry it out, that is not true sleep coaching and sleep training. Because if you're truly coaching and training, it's all about developing the skill set. It's all about creating the right environment and circumstances. It's all about doing it in a very gentle, sequential way over the course of 2 to 3 weeks. Because like any good skill, it takes practice till mastery. And children that are ages 6 months to 10 years old can learn their sleep skills. So you never want to sleep train a baby, typically, before they're rolling front to back and back to front and until they have completed their 4 to 5 month sleep regression. So most babies are rolling both ways and have completed their 4 to 5 month sleep regression right around 5.5 months to 6 months of age. And that is when a child has the readiness to learn the sleep skills more easily. So it's easier on you to help them learn. And then they have the mobility to help themselves go to sleep and stay asleep. So I know that was a really long answer to your big, but it was so, so, so important because there is such negative feelings and misunderstandings of the value of your child learning independent sleep skills for a lifetime.
I know, right?
Right? I mean, sleep is the foundation for health and well-being. And growth and development, especially in those, you know, school age years. So there's my long answer.
No, that was perfect.
Okay.
Because some people can, you know, might think also, oh, I can train the baby as soon as he's born, you know, but you just say until he rolls between 4 to 5 months.
Right.
And I guess it's also the time maybe when you not like you stop breastfeeding, but you know, the first few months you're really breastfeeding several times during the night. And after 6 months, the baby is supposed to sleep a little bit more and maybe eat a little bit more and can sleep through the night. And then you can start really doing the training,
so
right?
That's thank you for kind of drawing that distinction. So a lot of you might be thinking, but I have a newborn. Like I have I have a baby under 6 months. What do? I'm exhausted. So let's talk about that for a second. So in the world of sleep science, the newborn phase is considered from 0 to 6 months. So it's a long phase. And in that 0 to 6 months, there's just rapid, amazing cognitive and physical development. And the sleep cycles that the babies have tend to be very unreliable and unpredictable, which is why, especially those first 4 months before that rolling milestone happens, you know, you'll have like maybe 5 great nights followed by 3 really bad nights. And you're like, I don't understand. I thought I figured it out. That's unfortunately like newborn sleep, that 0 to 4 months. It can be very extremely unpredictable just because of the rapid growth and development and the hormone regulation that's going on to give you the longer sleep cycles. And then when you roll into the 4 to 5 month timeframe, that's when that massive rolling stone starts to happen. And the rolling milestone is like a 2-part milestone, right? They learn how to go from their back to their front, and then they have to learn a secondary milestone, which is, or a secondary skill, I should say, when they're on their stomach and they can go backwards, right? So for some babies, that's a lot of work, and they've got to practice and practice and practice and practice until mastery. And during that time when they're working on those skills, there can be just massive sleep disruptions because they're actively in a stage where whenever there's a massive milestone coming, there will typically be sleep regressions. So I always recommend, in fact, I'll pull out this book. I always recommend that anyone that has a child under 20 months of age should absolutely have this book. It's called The Wonder Weeks. There's also an app. This is the logo for the app if you're in the app store. What this does is it helps you understand the 10 developmental leaps that happen in the first 20 months of life, because every single time there's a leap, there will be a sleep regression every time. And so if you use the app, it will help you track and anticipate when the milestone is coming. And I always tell families like, hey, you're going to want to know because you don't want to like plan vacation during a milestone or have the grandparents stay with you during a milestone because your child is going to be sleeping very poorly at night and probably having really miserable naps. And generally they tend to be really like crying, clingy and cranky during the day when they're in a milestone. But the thing about the milestones is that it's critical. It's like, it's amazing because that means your baby's thriving and moving on to their next important task, right? So, you know, rolling to sitting up to arm crawling, then crawling, then standing, then walking, and then all the language that comes thereafter. So you'll want to know about the Wonder Weeks. But yeah, the first 6 months of life is really all about establishing the nursing relationship. If you're breastfeeding, it's about getting used to being a family, you know, whether you're become a family of three or you're adding a new family, you know, family of four, family of five, family of six, and just building new routines. And there's some sleep shaping you can do in the newborn phase, 0 to 6 months. But typically the actual sleep training when you're putting the child down awake and you're in that kind of 2 to 3 week like focused area, bringing on the skill set, it's best typically when the child has already started the rolling milestone and gotten through the sleep regression, because it would be such a sad thing to sleep train them before and then have the regression undo everything and then have to sleep train again. Like no one wants to do that. So you can love on your baby during the newborn phase. You can hold them and rock them and, you know, contact nap them. It's all perfectly fine because they genuinely need the help to go to sleep and go back to sleep in the newborn phase. It's perfectly acceptable to be very, very attentive to them during that time.
Yeah, it's such a shock when you've been cruising for months, the baby is sleeping perfectly, and then it hit that milestone, but you don't know anything about it. Might be your first kid.
Yeah.
And they tried and they start this regression. You're like, what happened? What's going on? Yeah. So yeah, that could be very helpful for sure, this app and the book that you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's so nice to be able to know, to have on the app. They call it the stormy period. So you can look to see when you're heading into a stormy period versus a sunny period. And like I said, you'll want to kind of know because you don't want to plan big trips around stormy periods because your child is just going to be upside down. I call it milestone madness. They're just like an entirely different child. Like they just are not the happy baby anymore. They're very discontented during milestones.
I think it happened to us actually. My first kid, we wanted just to have a little getaway on a weekend, just go to Monterey, not too far. And she didn't sleep at all the whole weekend. We were like crazy.
Yeah.
Ooh, we almost lost it over there.
Yep.
So it might have happened over there. Another question I have for you. So how can parents tell the difference between normal baby sleep behavior and potential sleep issues?
Because such a great question. I love that. That is such a great question. Okay. So yeah, what's normal sleep and what is like, I have to do something about this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let me do a little bit of this. So a sleep crutch, also known as a negative sleep association, is defined as anything we do at the onset of sleep at bedtime. If a child is rocked to sleep, fed to sleep, sucks to sleep, laid down with, patted to sleep, sang to sleep, like, or all of the above is needed, right? Like, so a sleep crutch is defined as anything, literally anything that has to be done to or for the child at the onset of sleep in order for the child to fall asleep. They will typically need or want some version of that at each arousal all night long. And depending on how old your child is, the arousals can be as fast as every 60 to 90 minutes.
Oh my God.
Or as long as 3 to 4 hours, right? So if your child has a whole bunch of sleep crutches at the onset of sleep, then when they hit their first arousal, they're going to wake up and they're going to look around and they're going to be like, hey, come on in. Where, you know, mom or dad or babysitter, whomever, caregiver, where are you? I need you to do some version of the same support that I had at bedtime. Some, you know, the sleep support you offered at bedtime. I need some version of that at each of these arousal cycles, right? So then you also fold in a child needing to feed, which is legit, right? So, you know, children sometimes can need 3 to 4 feeds in the middle of the night in the newborn phase. And then when they're like between 6 and 9 months, they still might need 2 or 3 feeds. And then, you know, and it goes on, right? So what happens when your question is, what is normal sleep? I would look at it as, does your child have a ton of sleep crutches at the onset of sleep at bedtime? Because if they have a ton of crutches at the onset of sleep at bedtime, it means that they do not have their sleep skills, which remember I said is regulate, settle, soothe to sleep. Mm-hmm. When they go into their sleeping environment awake, right? So if you are have a child that's still in a crib and you're finding that you need to, you know, first nurse them or bottle feed them and then rock them. And then once they're dead asleep in your arms, you have to like transfer them. And then when they wake up at the transfer, you've got to like pat them to sleep. And then you have to kind of like shimmy out of the room really carefully, you know, or if you have a child in a big boy bed or a big girl bed, like you fall asleep with them, maybe you're reading books and you're singing a song or talking about your day and they cuddle up with you and they fall asleep on you in a kind of a co-sleeping at the onset of sleep. And then you want to leave in order to go like, you know, take care of yourself and go back to your own bed. If you have to kind of like ninja yourself out and then your child wakes up and needs you again. Because typically whatever sleep support a child needs at the onset of sleep, whatever sleep crutch they need, they will need some version of that at every arousal all night. So normal sleep would be that if your child has a ton of sleep crutches at the onset of sleep or a lot of sleep crutches in the middle of the night, then that means they have not learned their sleep skills, which means that they don't have normal sleep because it means that they require somebody to do something to or for them in order to go to sleep and go back to sleep. Whereas normal sleep or healthy sleep is when a person can go in, you know, or a child or baby can go into their independent sleep space awake and they can regulate, settle, and soothe themselves to sleep so that when they have their arousal, they can wake up and do the same skills, regulate, settle, and soothe themselves back to sleep and continue their sleep cycles the rest of the night. So that's the difference between good sleep and sleep that is supported by sleep crutches.
Yeah, mine has like 3 or 4 sleep crutches right now between the pacifier, the caressing my face, and I have to sleep with her, and then it's a whole show. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And let me just say one thing about the pacifier, because that's like a debatable thing. Okay, so I'm actually pro pacifier. Because if the child can grab the pacifier, put it in their own mouth, and grab it if it falls out in the middle of the night, that they can go searching for it in their independent sleep space and grab it and put it back in and suck them, you know, use it to suck themselves back to sleep, then it is not a sleep crutch. But if the parent has to plug or replug all night long, or if the pacifier is part of a bedtime routine where their other crutches present, like you just described your situation. It's like, I have to lay down with her, then she has to cuddle with me, and then she needs her pacifier. And then in the middle of the night, she wakes up and she lost her pacifier. And then I got to go find her pacifier. And then I got to replug, and she's got to be in the bed with me. That's sleep crutching, right?
Yeah.
That's just, and I also want to be super clear, because some people are going to hear like, well, you're saying I can't co-sleep. Okay. So let's talk about that. Co-sleeping. I'm pro co-sleeping. Co-sleeping is great.
Okay.
Here's the thing about co-sleeping. This is when you'll know if co-sleeping is working for you. If the child wakes up well rested, if the mom wakes up well rested, if the other person, which I'm assuming is the partner, wakes up well rested, so the whole family wakes up well rested, and there are no sleep crutches at the onset of sleep or sleep crutches given in the middle of the night, then co-sleeping is fabulous, because it means you all have independent sleep skills and you just happen to be sharing a bed.
I know,
which is fabulous, right? Just like you share a bed with, you know, your partner. It's not like you're, you know, rubbing their back all night long, every single time at bedtime and in the middle of the night, you know, I mean, it's the same thing, right? So co-sleeping is great if everyone is waking up well rested, but if there's a ton of sleep crutches and the parent that is providing the sleep crutches is getting exhausted and overwhelmed and overburdened by the amount of things the child needs at bedtime or the middle of the night, then it's not really a co-sleeping environment. It just happens to be that the crutches are now existing inside the big bed.
I know.
So again, there's no judgment, you guys. And the other thing I want to say that's so important. So please, anybody that's like feeling a little bit like, oh my God, I'm not sure if I like this lady, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable. Here's the thing that you guys have to know about sleep crutches. Okay. So in the newborn phase, which remember is 0 to 6 months, it is totally normal and appropriate to have lots and lots of sleep crutches, right? Remember what I said earlier? In the newborn phase, we rock, we hold, we co-sleep, we contact nap, we wear, we drive in the car, all of that, because in the newborn phase, 0 to 6 months, babies genuinely need a lot of support to go to sleep and go back to sleep. And our ability to provide that support is really important, which is why I said in the newborn phase, like, love on your baby, enjoy the contact naps. Don't worry that you've missed some magical time to sleep train them. It's like, no, it's okay. Now, what happens is sometimes when they go from the newborn phase to the older baby phase, so 6 to 12 months, and then the next phase after that is 12 to 18 months, and then 18 months to, you know, 3 years of age. Those sleep crutches you had in the newborn phase can carry over into the different phases of development and age, and they can still work great. So sleep crutches, I have nothing against sleep crutches. Sleep crutches can work super fast, super easily. They could be super loving and they can be super just like attentive and lovely for both the caregiver and the child. So I have nothing against sleep crutches. They can work great and they can be a beautiful thing for a very, very, very long time. I'm talking 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
When sleep crutches become a problem is when they do what we call sleep crutch escalation, which means that the number of things that the child requires starts to increase.
Yeah.
So like it used to be like, okay, I used to be able to, you know, nurse her, rock her to sleep and transfer her and she'd stay asleep for at least 6 hours. But now I'm finding it's taking me longer to nurse her. I have to rock her for 40 minutes, not 5 minutes. And then whenever I transfer her to the crib, she wakes up and I got to do the whole thing over again. Or if with an older child, hey, it used to be that I could read books and just sing one song and kind of stay in the bed for like 5 or 10 minutes and then just, you know, get up freely and leave. And now I'm finding that like if I even move an inch away from the child, they wake up and bedtime is done, or if I actually manage to get out of the room, they're awake 2 hours later and want me to be back in the bed. And they need me to stay there the rest of the night, or else they'll continue to wake up. So that's this feeling where the menu is increasing, right? The things that they need or want start to layer up. They're either the things they need are taking longer, or the things they need are more. You know, like a parent will say, like, oh yeah, first I have to rock them, then I have to sing them three songs, then I have to say another prayer, then I need to do three more songs, I have to lay down with them. Then they have to like stroke my ear, and then they fall asleep, right? So sleep crutches can just keep going. So if you have sleep crutches right now and they're working for you and they're not overly exhausting, it doesn't mean that bedtime is not too arduous and your baby goes back to sleep in the middle of the night super quickly once you do the thing, then you're fine. They're working for you and they're working for the baby. But when they start to escalate and the parent can't keep up with the demands, that's usually when a parent will say, I think I'm ready to have my child learn independent sleep skills.
Yeah.
And usually when a child is sleep crutch escalating to the point where a parent can't keep up anyway, it really is a sign of readiness for the child to learn independent sleep skills, because in many ways, the child is saying to you, hey, that thing you used to do that used to work beautifully and easily for both of us, like it's not working great anymore. What else you got? And so then the parents get stuck in this dilemma where it's like, well, I'm giving you everything. I mean, I'm in the bed with you. I'm staying here until you fall asleep. I'm here with you all night. Like at a certain point, it's kind of like there is no more that I can add. So that's the way to think of it, is sleep crutches are not bad. They can work really well for a really long time. It's just if they sleep crutch escalate and you can't keep up, that's a sign of readiness that your child is ready for independent sleep skills. And that's when you can think about doing some thorough sleep training, which again, remember, is just creating an optimal learning environment for the skill set to come online.
Yeah. I know someone who had this issue until her kid was like eight year old. And finally, when he was eight, she contacted someone.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted you before because it's 2.5 and so it's driving me nuts.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's never too late. So that's really important, Veronique, is that people have this assumption that that they're too late. So if you're always looking at this through the lens that this is a learned skill, it's never too late to learn a new skill. As long as we create the right environment and circumstances to learn it, as long as we use a methodology that meets the temperament of the child. So, you know, I've worked with children that are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age that have been co-sleeping with their parent all along and, you know, want to go to want to do a slumber party and want to have the independence to go to a slumber party or go to sleepaway camp. Then we teach independent sleep skills so that the child can go to sleepaway camp. And it's beautiful and it's not shameful. Again, sleep crutches can work a really long time and it can be very joyful and lovely for both parent and child. But at a certain point, either the parent will want the child to learn, you know, be in their own independent sleep space, or the child might show up one day and say, Mom, I want to do I want to go to summer camp and I want to spend the night at Jenny's house. I need to be able to do this without you. And then we can help them learn the skills. And it's very empowering for the children. It's not anything scary or bad. Like, it's all about building confidence in a skill. The older kids love it. They love having the sleep independence. They feel so proud of themselves.
I know. It's important.
Yeah. Confidence is super important. Yeah.
So now let's talk about naps. So how do naps affect naptime sleep? Because some people think sometimes if the baby is sleeping too long, he's not going to sleep at night. So can that affect them too much that you have to wake them up? Because they always tell me, don't wake up a baby. So I don't. And for my first one, she was sleeping 3 hours during the day. She was sleeping like 10 hours and 3 hours during the day. And she was going right back to sleep at 7. So I had no issue. But for people who might be afraid or wondering,
sure.
For the sleep routine, is napping.
Yeah.
Napping affect that?
So the way to think about a child's sleep is you kind of want to think about it in two shifts, kind of the daytime shift, which is from the time they wake up that day to the time they're asleep at bedtime that night. So that, you know, sometimes it's 12 hours, sometimes it's 13, you know, it just kind of depends, right? And then the nighttime shift is from the time they're dead asleep at bedtime until they wake up in the morning. Okay. So in the daytime shift, depending on the age and stage of the child, they will have different sleep needs on how much daytime sleep they need. Typically from 6 months until 10 months, they typically need 3 naps a day. Between 10 months to about 15 to 18 months, they want 2 naps a day.
Yes.
And then by the time they're 18 months, they've usually switched to 1 nap a day, and they will hold on to that 1 nap sometimes until they're 3.5 or 4 years of age.
I know.
So daytime sleep is really important. And the reason why it's important is because if they don't get their daytime sleep needs met, it will actually cause them to go to sleep overtired at bedtime. And when they fall asleep overtired at bedtime, it creates a lot of unnecessary arousals in the night. So daytime, bad daytime sleep can quite literally cause all of those arousals that you just dread in the middle of the night. That the lack of daytime sleep is what causes the yucky, choppy nights with arousals. So understanding the sleep needs of your child, like how many naps they need and then how much actual daytime sleep they need spread between the 2, 3, or 1 nap is important. If you guys go to my website, which is blissfulbabysleepcoaching.com, again, blissfulbabysleepcoaching.com. If you go to my resources page, there is a download you can get, which is titled Sleep Matters, Ages and Stages Guide. And what that has is a guide on how many naps and how much daytime sleep a child needs at each age and stage up to age 6, and also how much nighttime sleep a child needs up to age 6. So it's very, very helpful to know, to kind of track where you are with how you're meeting your child's daytime sleep needs. Again, Sleep Matters, Ages and Stages chart on blissfulbabysleepcoaching.com on the resources page. Or you can always fill out the contact me form there, and it allows you to check a box that you want that, and then I'll send it to you. So that's a really valuable guide to have.
Because you could think that, you know, if the child is skipping that nap, he's going to sleep more during the night, right?
No.
But I notice it's totally the opposite. If he's skipping that nap, the night time is going to be horrible.
Yeah, a lot of times kids that have bad daytime sleep, they are a couple of things that you'll notice. One, they're really grumpy at bedtime and often do a lot of crying at bedtime. Second thing that happens is they have unusual arousals in the middle of the night. And the third thing is they actually wake up earlier than you want them to.
Yeah.
And that's what's called early rising. So you'll have a child that will wake up between 4 and 6 a.m. and not be able to go back to sleep. And that is actually caused by lack of daytime sleep.
Okay. So before we go, I have a last question for you. I have a lot of questions for you, but I know we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
What are the most common like sleep challenges that parents bring you? Just as some example. And how do you help them solve them?
Okay, great. So, as I mentioned, I work with families with children 6 months to 6 years of age. Mm-hmm. And, so it's never, ever too late. If you have any sleep challenge, it is always solvable. So that's the thing that I really want to leave with people, is that often people are afraid, like, you know what, maybe I'm just doomed to having a bad sleeper. Or, you know, maybe my child doesn't need as much sleep as like other kids. Or nothing's ever worked that I've tried. So therefore, I just have to assume that no matter what I do, this child is going to need me in order to go to sleep or go back to sleep. Those are all myths that are untrue. Because again, if you're always saying to yourself, well, wait a second, sleep is a learned skill, and my child has learned all these other skills, why would I ever assume they can't learn this skill? if given the right circumstances and environment and using the right methodology to meet their temperament. So it is something that you do not have to suffer sleepless nights. You do not have to live sleep deprived and overwhelmed because your child is not sleeping the way you want them to. Hope and help is always available. So that's the good news. That's really the good news. And I thought I forgot the second part of your question.
No, I was asking maybe if you have, I'm not going to ask you to give all your training here, but maybe like, how do you help them solve, you know, some of the issue, if you have like a training method, you know, that you give them, like a general one.
Yeah. Okay. So again, knowing that no sleep problem is you're never going to be in a situation where help and hope is not possible, meaning all sleep problems are solvable. So this is the very, very good news. Okay. Now, sometimes it is something that you can solve on your own. And what I mean by that is you might get a resource such as a sleep book or maybe take a digital program. And you are able to follow the guidance in the book and work on it step by step, day by day, over the course of, you know, 2 weeks or so, in order for the mastery of skills to kind of get, you know, embedded, and then the mastery of skills to get anchored. And so a lot of families can be successful in getting a book. The book that I always recommend is who I trained with, because as I mentioned at the onset, I'm a gentle sleep coach, so I don't believe in cry it out. I believe a parent should always be in the room when a child is learning their skills of sleep, and they should be in the room at the onset of sleep at bedtime, and they should be in the room at every arousal all night. And whenever you're doing sleep training, you can obviously honor the nursing relationship. So you can still sleep train and still be a nursing mom. That there's no jeopardy that you would ever have in your nursing relationship while simultaneously sleep training. So that's the good news. So if families are like, I just want to follow a book, the book I always recommend is Good Night, Sleep Tight by Kim West. And the reason why I like this book is because you do not have to read the whole book. That is the thing. Like, a tired mom does not have time to read a book. Okay. I would read the section on understanding tears, which is about 2 pages. And then it's divided by the age and stage of your child. And I would just read the section on the age of your child. What's really important is that you want you and your partner to read. So the thing about sleep training is this is not something that mom does on her own. Okay. When you're looking to help your child learn a new skill, it's a family affair. So it's really important that you have a conversation with your partner and really talk about like, hey, I think we need to improve the sleep in this household. Let's educate ourselves, which is why I love this book. It's very educational. And let's decide how and when we're going to actually do some sleep training. Because it's not something you want to start haphazardly. Like, you want to be planning to do it. Like, you'll set aside 2 weeks when you know you're going to be home. You're not going to have guests. You're not going to be traveling. You know you can be home by 5 or 5:30 at night. You can set up, again, that optimal learning environment every single day over the course of 2 to 3 weeks so that the skills can come online. So you're doing a book or a digital program can help you do that. Now, for some families, they'll say to me, you know what, Joanna, I'm smart enough to read a book. I'm smart enough to, you know, watch a video, but I don't have the time or the patience, or, you know, I know me and my partner will argue about it, even though we're trying to follow the directions. We need somebody to work with us one-on-one, day by day, step by step, so that we kind of build like a united front. So we're moving along all in sequence so that we reach our goals faster and easier. That's usually where a sleep coach would come in. And as I mentioned, I'm a gentle sleep coach. So I work with families one-on-one over the course of 2 to 4 weeks to solve all their sleep challenges. And it's a beautiful process because I have a 5-part process that is very individualized and focused and very unique to your individual child and their temperament, but also very customized for the logistics of your household, right? Everybody has different work schedules. Everybody has different caretaker needs, you know, all of this, like a really very well-trained, certified, and tenured sleep coach is going to know how to customize in a way that's not just about the sleep science and behavioral science, but it's also about customizing so that implementing is going to be easy for you. Because that's one of the big things that can happen to people. I always say, like, a plan is only as good as your bandwidth to execute it. And so the job of a really good coach is to create a plan that is in small little micro steps, so it becomes very stress-free for you to implement it while also simultaneously making progress with your child. So I've been doing this for nearly 14 years, and I've helped thousands of families all over the United States. I do everything over Zoom, which seems totally bizarre that I could like solve such a complex, intimate issue via Zoom, but I'm never not successful. I mean, it's pretty an incredible process because, again, every child can learn a skill if we work with them at the right pace and we match everything to their temperament. And we also match it to the logistics of the household so it's easy to execute. So those families that are like interested and want to learn more about my process, I welcome you to go to blissfulbabysleepcoaching.com. You can fill out the contact me form and we can actually have a conversation about your unique situation. I do a sleep strategy session. It's an hour long where I'm able to do an assessment on kind of the root causes of your sleep challenges. And we talk about how complex your situation may be. And if it's something that I feel like you can do on your own, you know, I'm going to suggest a book or I'll suggest a digital program. Or in some cases I might be able to tell you exactly what to do in that moment and be like, you know what, there's only like three things wrong. Do this, do this, do this, and go solve it on your own. But for other families, they really do need to do from top to bottom sleep training over the course of 2 to 4 weeks. And so some families just genuinely need the one-on-one support. When people ask me like, okay, well, who are your clients? I'm like, well, there's three types of clients. There's like the client that hires a coach every single time they need help. They're like, so they're the person that has a life coach, that has a nutrition coach, that has a workout trainer, that had a doula, that had a midwife.
Yeah.
And now they're like, all right, now I need a sleep train. I'm going to hire an expert and I'm going to do this well, and I'm going to do it once. And they just know, they just go straight to the expert. They get the help because they know that coaching means that you get to your goals faster and you usually feel a lot better about how you got there. The second kind of bucket of families is a mom, like busy working parents that are like, you know what? We need to do this now. We have a short period of time when we can do this as a family. We need to get results faster. And we need the accountability so that we don't like start getting lazy, and we know, and we want to work through the process together as a team. And then the third bucket is actually a pretty big bucket where the partners will come online and be like, oh, we're going to argue. So we need that third person to help us always be making decisions together as a team, the parents of this child, and then implementing day by day, step by step, so that we are high-fiving each other in the middle of the night instead of pointing fingers and getting resentful and bitter with each other because I did more than you did and all that tit for tat stuff. Yes. So those are usually kind of the three types of families that will come and want to say, sign me up for one-on-one support because I need that level of customization. I love to be the place where people come, where I'm the, you know, offer accurate and reliable information. So the sleep strategy session is my offer to you that if you just want to say, I just need to ask some questions about my baby, I just need to talk to somebody live that will hear me out. That is why I do these sleep strategy sessions, because I believe moms don't have enough time to discuss their concerns around sleep. They don't have time when they go to the pediatrician's office. And I try to be that place to come for expert support and valuable insight that's based on science.
Well, Joanna, thank you very much for all the information. Thank you for also giving all the website and everything on the podcast. I will, of course, yes, add all the links in the show notes for people who want to connect with you. I'm sure it resonated with a lot of women out there. And I'm sure they're going to have a look at your website because you were recommended by a mutual friend. And I'm very happy she introduced me to you. I'm very, very grateful. And hopefully, you know, it will work out. I will let you know. I will let also the listener know what happened.
Yes. So Veronique is in the process of determining if she's fitting in the do-it-yourself camp or the do-we-need-some camp. And I just want to say, you guys, that is really normal. Like a lot of families will come to me and be like, okay, tell me what's going on. What do I need to know? Give me some resources and let me kind of go think it through. And again, this is great because this is gives you and your partner the chance to educate yourself. It's all about making an educated decision before you start anything. So do your reading, talk about it, look at your schedule, determine when you have 2 weeks. Talk about who's going to be the coach. Like talk and talk and talk and talk some more before you execute. Because if you try to sleep train on the edges where you're just kind of like, well, let's just try it this weekend and see what happens.
No.
The child's not going to learn under those conditions. I often liken sleep training with like dieting. Like you don't just like show up tomorrow and go, I'm going to go on a diet and not really think about what kind of diet and what's my meal plan and when am I exercising and when am I going to be done having my last meal and how many calories and how much, you know, protein do I need? Like that's when you start to lose weight, when you're very, you know, very conscientious and systematic and you've given yourself a large period of time when you know you're going to be following your diet. Sleep training is the same way. You can't just like randomly try it this weekend and hope for the best because that is not sequential learning. They're trying to learn.
Makes me also think about potty training. You know, you're not going to start when you know you have a trip coming up or you're not going to try only this weekend. You have to commit for at least 2 weeks for the potty training for them to be ready. So, all those kind of training, you have to commit. Think about it, read about it. And
And again, you want to be educated before you make this decision because you want to be successful on the first try. And you want to feel good about what you're doing and how you're doing it so that it will be a good learning experience for your child, right? And that's another reason why a lot of families end up with one-on-one coaching is they're like, you know what? I just want to know that at the end of this process, two things happen. One, my child's sleeping independently. And two, that I can feel really proud as a mother that I did this in a way where I was honoring my child and I was making and doing it carefully, sequentially, and safely so that I reach my goal without forcing a solution on my baby, that I want to be part of their learning process. I want to see the learning coming online. I don't want to force the learning to happen. Yeah. And so that is why the one-on-one coaching can be so valuable is because the coach is creating, helping you see all the learning opportunities. And this is, something I prepared, I call it the sleep puzzle. These are all the things your child is going to be learning in order to get independent sleep. So you can't see this because that's how detailed it is. There's tons of skills at the onset of sleep at bedtime, tons of things that happen in the middle of the night, tons of things that happen at early rising, which is between 4 and 6 a.m. And then naps is its own independent zone, right? So It is sequential learning. I mean, you can't do this in 3 days. So this idea that a child can learn something in 3 days is another giant myth. So educate yourself, talk to professionals that are trained and certified that have years of experience. This is a hard job. You guys, you need a lot of training and experience to be valuable to parents. And again, I do gentle sleep coaching, because I do believe a parent needs to be in the room. I don't believe in cried out. And any books or resources I do are going to come from three sciences: sleep science, behavioral science, and attachment theory. So everything I do is based on science. All so right. Thank you so much for having me here. Blissfulbabysleepcoaching.com. Tons of resources on there, and you can always schedule a sleep strategy session.
Perfect. Thank you, Joanna. And maybe we'll talk to you again, maybe, you know, another time. We'll see. But thank you for all the information.
Great. All right. Blissful sleep to all. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to High Vibes and the Mic. Until next time, laugh hard, stay silly, and never forget to bring your sense of humor. Please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.